Singer-songwriter Adia Victoria has a complicated relationship with the South. She felt like an outsider as a young woman of color growing up in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and that comes across in every guitar riff and haunting vocal. She released her debut album, Beyond the Bloodhounds, earlier this year. Adia will perform tomorrow night in Atlanta at The Earl, and I spoke with her this summer. I asked her first about a gift she received for her 21st birthday. One of her friends gave her a guitar.
It was a Washburn. It was an acoustic Washburn. My best friend, she decided to move from Atlanta to Seattle, and she was like, would you like this guitar? And I said, yes, I would like that guitar. So I started learning guitar.
And you hadn't ever really played guitar before?
Never.
So why did you want it?
I think at a time in my life, I wasn't doing much. I was working in Atlanta as a telemarketer, and I was just spiritually empty at that time. And I was like, I could learn a new instrument. I like blues music, and I think I could play it. So I just had no other options. So I just picked up the guitar and I fell in love, and I just created this own little world for me.
What drew you to blues music in particular?
I like the stories. The way that the performers were relaying the stories to the listener was completely different than anything that I'd ever heard. And of course, there's like the undeniable, like the beat of it, the very like intrinsic beat of the blues, the bass lines. But I like that they were telling me about Black lives in a way that I hadn't seen them validated externally. Like, these are people that had humor about being poor, about being dumped, about, you know, running around the countryside, like escaping their demons. And it was something that I was feeling at the time when I started listening to the blues, and it just really struck a chord with me.
And this is about the time when you moved to Atlanta, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I read something that you described when you got to Atlanta. You said, I heard Black inner lives for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you meant by that.
I feel like growing up as a young Black girl in the South, I had very specific messages told to me about my value and who I was, my identity, that had nothing to do with me. It was very impersonal. And the things that I was being told, I didn't feel that way inside of myself. I felt more restless. I felt a lot more uprooted. I felt lost a little bit. And there was nothing outside of me that was validating that I should feel that way, you know? And so I feel like a lot of time growing up, I had to put on like a mask of, okay, well, I'm okay, and I guess I'll be all right. But it never really connected to anything inside of me. So when I started listening to the blues, they were talking about, you know, I heard women speaking about being weird and like feeling like freaks and being okay with that and like traveling around and not necessarily living up to the status quo, but in fact subverting it. And that made me feel for the first time like, hey, maybe I do matter. Maybe the thoughts that I have about the world do matter.
So you've written about the South quite a bit in your music, actually. I wanted to take a listen to one song, Stuck in the South.
I don't know nothing about nothing by far. All misery. Ooh, I've been dreaming of swinging from that old palm of tree.
You describe the South in a lot of really different ways. So in Stuck in the South, there's a line where you say, I don't know nothing about Southern bells, but I can tell you something about Southern hell. When your skin give them cause to take and take. So this is a side of the South that's talking about it being a place of well, obviously racism, but also tribulation, just struggle, mm-hmm. especially for someone of color. Where does this song come from? Was it just like a look back at the whole region, or was it a personal story?
It was a personal story. I wrote this song 3 years ago from my viewpoint as a teenager in high school in Malden, South Carolina, a really small town, a suburb town of Greenville. And I just remember feeling at that time in my life that I'd never lived anywhere. I'd never really experienced anything other than the upstate. And I felt stifled. I felt suffocated. I felt smothered, in fact, by my upbringing. And I knew that there was more to the world, but I couldn't really fathom it. And so I kind of, like a lot of teenagers do, you kind of turn all of your aggression outward against, you know, the little town you're growing up in and, you know, the values and what you're taught you're supposed to be. You need something to rage against. And for me, it was the South. And again, like, I just remember what society was telling me my place was, like what society was telling my value was as like a young, lower class Black girl who necessarily didn't buy into the things that they would say validated me, like your looks or who you're dating, any of that. Like, I wasn't interested in any of that. And so I just felt completely alienated from my upbringing. And for a kid, like, that can kind of feel like an existential crisis when you feel no connection to the world around you, but also feel like oppressed by it as well.
And in a way, the way that you're describing the South in general is also the way you've talked about nature. I mean, you grew up in the shadow of the Blue Ridge Mountains, right, in South Carolina?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you've said that nature terrified you and that it's unforgiving. Why do you describe nature that way?
The reason nature spoke to me was because its authority superseded society's authority. You know, it didn't play by the rules that I was taught. It did its own thing regardless of what, you know, man needed it to do or wanted from it. And so I found this kind of comfort in that, and that I could appeal to nature instead of society. Like, I would go out in the little town that we were raised in, Campobello, and me and my sisters would just like go out into the woods and pretend like we were in a place where no man had ever stepped foot. And we would just be in awe of like the mountains and the storms and the countryside where there was no sign of any life. And there was something very comforting about that. Like it just remained unmarked and unsullied by mankind. And I liked that it didn't play by the rules.
So let's hear another piece of music. This is the song called Howlin' Shame. And when I think of you as a blues singer, this song comes immediately to mind. Listening to the blues, who were you listening to?
I was listening to Victoria Spivey. I was listening to Skip James, Robert Johnson. These were my main three. Like, these are the big three for me. And I kind of branched outward from there. But I always come back to their work for the storytelling properties, for the musical value of it. Victoria Spivey, she was, you know, the woman that kind of gave me a shot in the arm. And I watched countless videos of her on YouTube. I think I've seen every video of her on YouTube, and I just watched her performing and her reveling in her power, and I loved it. And I was just like, I need to do that. I have to do that. And I love Skip James's, the way that he kind of explores his terror at his own existence, at his place in the world, his anxiety. Like, his music is so anxiety ridden. He talks a lot about death and demons moving through him, and that was something that I needed to hear. I needed people to reaffirm that these things happen, and everyone's not always going to look happy and flawless all the time. Like, there's a very dark underbelly to the human experience.
So I wonder what change it makes, do you think, in your songwriting and your singing, that you're usually holding a guitar? Would you be a different singer if you were, obviously, Katy Perry, or just somebody who just stands up and holds a microphone, as opposed to usually having the guitar in your hand?
Well, I mean, I do both. There's a few songs where I don't have the guitar necessarily, but it is a different experience as a performer when you do have the instrument in your hand, because you're connecting to something else, like you're actually making the music. So it feels completely different for me, but I enjoy both. Like, I don't prefer one over the other. A lot of these songs came about me writing them on the guitar. So it's a necessary element on a few of the tracks. It just adds something different, I feel like, to my vocal approach even.
So here's another song, and this is perhaps the one most well-known. This is called Dead Eyes.
Since you left this town, you know, if I could beg or borrow the money, child, I'd be highway bound. I live all alone, may ever know. Little girl wouldn't say I do, but I feel so sad and blue. You know that it's all 'cause of you. I could cry, I could cry, I could cry. I could die, die, I could die. It's a lonely avenue. It's a lonely avenue.
So this video, it takes place in nature. It's almost like I was watching this video and thinking about all the different threads in this, because it's heavily laden with a lot of religious overtones. It's coming off an album called Beyond the Bloodhounds, which can't help but call up images and themes of slavery. And it's a video was shot in a really stark, I guess it was a forest, but there's no leaves on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about the sounds of this song itself that you chose to start totally a cappella.
Yeah, well, the video starts with a cappella cover of Lonely Avenue by Ray Charles. And that's a song that I fell in love with while I was living in Atlanta. Something about that story of, you know, Ray being dumped by this woman and just being left in utter like despair. Like, he's been like displaced after she's left him. And it's a song that I've been singing a cappella for years, since about 2009. It's just always stuck with me. And I wanted to record it. It was just my dream to record that song.
Why a cappella though? Why do you sing it unaccompanied?
Because I wanted to sing it the way that I sang it in my room and in my head, and sitting on the bus and sitting on the MARTA. And, you know, that's how this song kept me company. Like, I would walk up and down Ponce de Leon to the train station singing this song at 4 a.m. You know, that's its place in my life. And so I wanted to pay homage to that on the record and then also in the video.
If you're just joining us, my guest is singer-songwriter Adia Victoria. One of the things that I read, and please correct me if this is not correct, but it was written in your Wikipedia page that you moved to Nashville because you felt like it would be easier to be anonymous there.
I moved to Nashville because I got fired from my job in Atlanta, and I was collecting unemployment and not doing anything in my life except for sitting in my apartment in Midtown. And my whole family had moved to Nashville at this point. And my mom was like, why don't you come to Nashville and be with your family? I think that she could tell that I was slipping into a very dark place, just hanging out in Atlanta. So that's why I moved there. I moved there to be with my family. But that's one of the reasons I love Nashville, is that I have my own private life there. Like, I don't go out in the scene. I don't hang out in the nightlife. I'm not trying to be noticed. That's where I live my day-to-day life. That's where I take care of my business. And I keep my business to myself in Nashville. Like, I don't want people knowing who I am or what I'm up to. Just go away.
So,
let me alone.
You do write about dark themes and dark places in your music. And I wonder, does your music relieve that kind of darkness, or does it add to it?
I think it relieves it for sure. It allows me to, like, a lot of these songs, they're relaying moments, like, and instances and, like, interactions that I've had with people and circumstances where at the time I didn't have the voice to speak to what I felt or what was going on around me. So I would go and, like, write a song and just, like, get it all out. And in that way, I kind of felt like I hadn't been, like, conquered by something, or I wasn't, like, stuck in a certain interaction with somebody or a certain dynamic with a person. Like, I could just get it all out. But then when I perform it, I try to go back to what it felt like in that moment, like where I was. And I think that affects the way that people see me on stage. It's like I just disappear because I'm not there anymore. I'm reliving these moments in my life. So it's kind of interesting. Like I write the songs because it's therapeutic so I can work through it. But then I go on tour and then I just dive right back into that.
Do you think of yourself as an activist? Do you think that you have a message to relay?
I think that I have a story to tell. I'm not an activist. I am living an active life and I'm telling that story to people. And it's kind of like what Nina Simone said once. Someone asked her the same kind of question and she was basically like, I am civil rights. Like, I can only tell you what happened. I can only tell you what's going on. That's my story, is to let you know what happened. And then from there, you guys can go out and be inspired to act on, you know, what I'm telling you. But my job as an artist is to remain open and accessible and to tell my story to people as honest as I can.
Adia Victoria is a singer-songwriter. Adia, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.